Thank you so much for listening to Latino USA. You know, we want to better understand who's listening and how you're using our podcast. So help us out by completing a short anonymous survey at npr.org/podcast survey. One word. It takes just a few minutes, and it really helps support the show. That's npr.org/podcast survey. Thank you.
During the World Cup, I'm Argentinian. I mean, if you search pictures of me, you will find me wearing my Argentinian jersey, and I root for Messi. But they always ask me, like, so if Argentina and Korea played, who would you root for? I'm like, yeah, and they, hey, like, I was born here, I grew up here, like, ¿qué te pasa, flaco? Soy de acá.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today on Being Asian and Latino. In the United States, the two fastest growing ethnic groups are Asians and Latinos. And these groups are not mutually exclusive. For centuries, immigrants from Asia have settled throughout Latin America. There's Korean communities in Mexico and in Argentina. There are Chinatowns everywhere from Santo Domingo to Lima. There's a major Japanese population in Brazil. And that's just a few of the many Asian communities that exist in the region. The descendants of those immigrants carry both Asian and Latin American identities. And inside the U.S., Asians and Latinos have lived side by side in heavily immigrant neighborhoods and have created lives together. So today, we're going to hear from four of our listeners who we invited to be on our show to talk about their Asian Latino identity and how it has shaped their experiences in the United States. David Chang is a Peruvian American of Chinese descent. He's a project coordinator for a nonprofit in San Francisco. Christy Osorio is the daughter of a Filipina mother and a Salvadoran father, born in Southern California, and she's a community organizer now in the Bay Area. Pablo Kim is a chef and entrepreneur. He's the son of Korean immigrants and was born in Argentina. He's based in Los Angeles. And finally, Sophie Khan is an actress who stars in the award-winning one-woman show called Mexistani, growing up Mexican and Pakistani in America. She grew up in my hometown of Chicago and now lives in L.A. We're going to start by talking about the term Chino, which means Chinese in Spanish, but it's often used in Latin America to refer to all Asians or even anyone who looks vaguely Asian, regardless of where they may have come from. So let's jump straight into the conversation. So David, you know, you actually wrote to our producer, Janice Yamoka, and you basically, well, I don't know, you were like, okay, I got to ask something of Latino USA. So what was the question?
So the question that I wanted to try and figure out was, how do other Asians identify coming from a Latino background? My name is David Chang, and I grew up going to Chinese immersion school and speaking Spanish at home. Chino in Latin America, a lot of people that are called Chino, you know, they could be from Korean backgrounds, they could be from Japanese backgrounds, they could be from a number of different Asian backgrounds, but they're still considered Chino. And growing up, I think I heard that word a lot, both in Latino communities that I grew up around, friends from like Central America, South America.
I also grew up in California, so I look Filipina, and I would just, by my own family members, be called China, or just in the streets of L.A. be called China. Hi, my name's Christy Osorio. I was born in Los Angeles to a Filipino and a Salvadorian couple. I actually asked my mom about this. I was like, so what do you think about this? And she's the Filipina. And she's like, oh yeah, China, that's just a cute way of saying like Asian girl. I'm like, okay, cool. Because, you know, I get called China. And she's like, what? You're not Chinese? I was like, I don't get it. What? Like, how do you really feel about this? I mean, personally for me, I think growing up in California, a lot of people have really embraced it. Like, I ride by this car every single day that has Chinito as a giant sticker on the back of the car. So, I don't know, you have to put it in context, and it's all about, like, intent, too. If someone's trying to use that word derogatory towards me, I'm like, I'm not feeling it. But if someone wanted to just call me a China because it's a term of endearment, then I'm all about it.
So, Pablo, you were a contestant on the Telemundo show Master Chef Latino.
Todos con el mismo sueño, entrar a la cocina de Master Chef Latino.
And you had your own experience with this term, Chino. So tell us what that was.
My name is Pablo Kim. I was born in Argentina. My parents are both Korean. And I moved to the States in 2000. I've been living here ever since. This was about a year ago, and we were in Miami.
¿Cómo te llama?
Me llamo Pablo. El plato que estoy preparando es un plato tradicionalmente coreano.
People just referred to me as el chino. And I'm like, guys, like, you know, it's cool, but you know, you guys don't really know me all that much. When you don't know me and you just call me el chino just because it's the easiest thing for you to do, it's like, I kind of take offense to that. I think I've come to feel over the years that as long as I am not reduced to one unique characteristic of my appearance, I'm actually okay with it. But then again, it really comes back to the relationship that I have with that person.
So can I ask you guys, how often have you sat around and had conversations about being Latino, Latina, and Asian?
The first conversation, if anything, was with my parents, because they were the ones that kind of had to straighten a lot of things out. Hi, my name is Sophie Khan. I am bicultural, bilingual, and bisexual, and my parents are Mexican and Pakistani, and I am all of that. I didn't really realize what I was until I had a babysitter that was, you know, a lot of my babysitters were either Black or Puerto Rican, and then, so you can imagine what my Spanish sounded like. Like, oye, mami, yo quiero un tostón, yo quiero pastel. And so my mom was like, where are you getting this Spanish from? And I'm like, well, yeah, that's how we talk, no? And she's like, no, mija. She's like, and then it wasn't until later, like, that she explained. She's like, no, your babysitter's Puerto Rican and you are Mexican and Pakistani.
So let's talk a little bit about the multiplicity of identity and how you guys kind of live with that. So, David, you've talked about, you know, when you go to Peru, mm-hmm. which is your parents' homeland, being Chinese for you is essentially just being Peruvian because it's pretty common.
Correct.
But when you come back to the United States, your Peruvian side basically disappears and everybody just sees you as Chinese.
Yeah. I grew up in a neighborhood that had a lot of predominantly people from Latin America, from El Salvador, from Nicaragua, from Ecuador. They always saw me as Chinese, even though, you know, we would speak Spanish amongst friends and amongst family members. They always saw me as this other person. And I think that was really hard growing up. On the other side, I also went to Chinese immersion school in San Francisco, where a lot of the people that I went to school with were from Cantonese backgrounds or, you know, Chinese-speaking backgrounds. And I would go to their houses on play dates or just to have fun. And I wouldn't be able to interact with their families, which made it really difficult for me. They basically said, you know, you're not necessarily Chinese.
Pablo, I saw you shaking your head. You're like, because we're doing video call, you're like shaking your head. Yes, yes, yes. What was that about?
I've gone through the very same experience where I've actually lived in Mexico City, I've lived in Korea, and I've had the chance to be fully rejected by people from all over the place. It's a tough pill to swallow. It's being rejected by people that look exactly like you because you may not necessarily speak the language perfectly or because you dress differently. So it's kind of hard.
I'm like nodding my head too. I'm like almost to tears because feeling rejected from like every culture is really hard. It's like you're never Filipino enough. You're never Salvadorian enough. And you're definitely not white.
And Sophie, you're probably saying, yeah, all of that confusion and then some.
Yeah. I've had a lot of what I call my gas station chronicles. I was living in East LA one time. I was asking a cashier who I say was Latino. I asked him, I was like, hey, like, how much is this sparkling water? And he's asking his boss and in Spanish, right? And the guy goes, oh, you know, just cóbrala, you know, $5 no le hace. Eso indio, tienen plata, tienen dinero.
Oh,
and,
whoa.
Yeah, like, yeah, overcharger, because, you know, those Indian folks, they're rich. They got it made. And I was like, oh, de verdad. And I said, pues aquí te dejo $2 a huevo, and I was like, and that's it. Oh, I don't know if I can say that on the radio. But.
You just did.
So I was upset. I was like, oh, my gosh.
All right, Pablo, so you grew up in Argentina. And I'm wondering if there's this notion there of Asians being the model minority. I mean, that's often the stereotype here in the United States, but did you have to face that in Argentina, or are there different stereotypes there?
When I was in Argentina, a lot of the Asians over there are business owners. My parents are entrepreneurs themselves. Actually, everybody in my family are entrepreneurs. And we would get a lot of people saying, no, you guys are welcome here because, no, you guys are here breaking your backs, doing everything that you guys need to do, you know, educating yourselves and establishing something for yourselves. So we would get that on some days, and we would get the go back to your country on some others, mostly when customers were not happy with whatever they bought.
Your favorite food, which one is it? Is it Latino or Asian? David, which one is it?
I would say it's Latino. You know, favorite Peruvian dish is probably like seco. And also growing up in California, just, you know, like burritos and tacos. And one time I went to a park and a bottle of Tapatio shattered on the floor and I almost cried. So.
Oh my gosh.
And Sophie, what's your favorite food?
You know what? My favorite food has been the food that my parents make. And it's sometimes it'll be a mix. My mom will make tacos, chicken tikka masala tacos. She'll be like, look, we're going to take your dad's leftovers from yesterday. We're going to put in some tortillas. Bam, there you go, dinner.
Coming up on Latino USA, our conversation about being Asian and Latino continues. Stay with us. No te vayas.
I'm Bob Boylan, creator of the Tiny Desk Concert Series. We've just launched the 2019 Tiny Desk Contest. It's our search for the next great undiscovered artist. The winner gets to play a Tiny Desk Concert. It'll change your life. Find out more at npr.org/Tiny Desk Contest.
Hey, we're back. And when we left off, we were talking about stereotypes of Asians in Latin America and about Asian versus Latino food. And now I'm going to share a story about food from my very first trip to Asia. I remember when the first time in my life that I went to Asia, it was early in the morning and we started walking the streets and we came upon a bakery in Taipei, Taiwan. You guys, I totally freaked out because I looked in the window and I was like, this is a Mexican bakery. They have conchas. They have polvorones. They have like, it was the same kind of bakery goods. I was freaking out. I literally had one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, my roots, my Mexican roots are in Asia as well. For me, everybody's trying to divide us, send us back home. But actually, like seeing the concha, a Mexican bread in Taipei, I was like, nah, we are totally the same people.
Either that or Mexicans are everywhere.
You know, like, there's one thing that I've noticed between, you know, like the Mexican culture and the Korean culture is that we both like beans. We all have like kind of short tempers and both cultures are very family oriented. There are really more things that unite us than divide us. And I don't see why people don't see those things. It just escapes me why we do this as a species, really.
You know, if you are Latinx and Asian right now in the United States of America, you are part of the two fastest growing demographic groups in our country. So in some ways, people might say you guys are like the superheroes of the film. Have you flipped it so that you guys are like, you know, forget all y'all who are excluding us. We understand deeply that we have this superpower.
That just reminds me of an experience where I think growing up, I played a lot of soccer. And a lot of times you'd come across people that were like, oh, mira ese chinito, juega bien, right? So that was kind of like my trump card. Like I could, you know, be here and play in like both places and in both cultures at once. I think that's also played out in like my career as well. I navigate a lot of different communities and spaces. Speaking Spanish has definitely helped me communicate with a lot of different communities that can't speak up for themselves and kind of, you know, navigating different relationships and trying to highlight different stories and people's voices. So I think language has definitely helped me be in two different places at once. So being able to speak Chinese, Cantonese, and Mandarin, and then also Spanish as well has helped me navigate the world a little bit better.
Christy.
I kind of see my superpower as like super validator, where I'm like, you know, people might not think I'm Filipina enough or Salvadorian enough or whatever, but I'm like, hey, my experiences are real and your experiences are real. And I'm here to witness that for you because I didn't necessarily have that for myself growing up. You were mentioning that like Asian and Latinx communities are the next largest population in the United States. And for me, it's always been split. Like you're either Asian or you're Latin. And I want to make sure that Asian, Latinx communities are also being represented in that demographic as well, because we're all mating with each other. Like, don't forget about all of us here that have been like, we're like the offshoots of all these great population growths.
Sophie?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's allowed me to have great empathy for folks that have been ostracized from their communities. I have a special kinship for Latinos that maybe have been here in the U.S. for about five, you know, generations or whatever, and don't know Spanish and get bothered when someone speaks to them in Spanish and they feel like, oh, man, I should know, but I don't know. And they feel like less than. I get it because I don't speak fluent Urdu. It's more like Urdont. I don't speak it. So it's it's just, I think that's what it's allowed me to be, is just have a lot of empathy for folks. And again, folks that have been ostracized from different communities.
So I guess just to end, how have you found the place that has made you feel whole? What have you done? How have you found it? Or are you still struggling? And let's start with you, David.
I think something that has helped in terms of finding, you know, a place that I can say that it's helped me center myself is definitely amongst family and friends who also identify as coming from this Latinx Asian background. So trying to find people that are like-minded and can relate and have those similar stories.
What about you, Christy?
Yeah, I feel so lucky to like have moved to a area where there's just a lot of people from different backgrounds, and it's made me feel a lot more comfortable in my own skin. I think growing up in white suburbs really messed me up. Like it was, you know, there was this really big time of like just being called all these types of things, not feeling accepted in any community, and then finally just like taking off and going to college and meeting new people, even if they weren't necessarily Asian Latinx, just like hearing other people's experiences too, like has really helped. And actually, what I really, really appreciate is these conversations being put out in media so much. I've been really, really feeling certain outlets like Remezcla.
Why do so many Latinos use the word chino to describe Asian people?
And Pero Like.
I'm half Taiwanese and half Brazilian.
Part Mexican and part Filipino.
Dominicano Chino.
They talk about these types of things. I was recently watching this on Univision. Like, what? That, like, for the first time ever in my life, like, they acknowledged Asian Latinos. And this was, like, last week.
Pablo?
Everybody who knows me or has known me for over a decade will tell you that I am constantly reinventing myself. I pick and choose whatever, you know, is more advantageous for me at the time in the position that I am, depending on what I'm trying to do. So in a way, I think I have a pretty stable core, But at the same time, I want to tell you that it's constantly shifting. There's always something changing in there. All these conversations are great because they shed light on things that are oftentimes ignored. And I think that that's even going on in today's political sphere and on everything that's going on. And we only get to understand these things once we are made aware. And I think that it's, you know, it's a lifelong process where we're always trying to see and discover ourselves and try to understand why we do the things that we do.
I would say understanding that Pablo grew up in Argentina, where there is a lot of psychotherapy, that was like really well done. You know, Buenos Aires has the highest ratio per capita of therapists to human beings. So that was very eloquent.
True story. Yes.
It's a true story. Sophie, just wrap it up.
I find love in the gay community. I mean, you want to talk about like a community of folks that have gone through so much within their own families, within society, within like different issues in the legal system. That's where I kind of find like a safe haven, to be quite honest, where I'm not getting picked on because I don't know how to make tamales, or I'm not getting picked on because I messed up and ate with my left hand, because the left hand is considered the dirty hand in Islam and the right hand is considered the clean hand. And, you know, like, I am just being me and loving it and connecting, and it's love is love, and in the end, love wins.
You guys, thank you so much for speaking with me, Sophie Khan, Pablo Kim, Christy Osorio, and David Chang. Thank you so much for opening up your hearts and sharing with us. We really appreciate it.
Gracias, Maria. Yeah.
Gracias.
Gracias, Maria.
Thanks for having us.
David Chang is a project coordinator for a nonprofit in San Francisco. Christy Osorio is a community organizer in the Bay Area. Pablo Kim is a chef and entrepreneur. And Sophie Khan is an actress who stars in the award-winning one-woman show called Mexistani, Growing Up Mexican and Pakistani in America. And I want to thank all of them so much for such an honest conversation. This episode was produced by Janice Yamoka and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Palizacá, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Maya Cueva and additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholtz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure to stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. And one more thing for our podcast listeners. Can I ask you a favor? Just take a moment to rate and review Latino USA on whatever podcast app you listen to us on, because this really helps other people to find us, and we know you want to help us do that. And also, truth be told, all of the staff loves reading your comments, so keep them coming. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa, and I love reading your comments too. Join us on our next episode of the program, and in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. I'll see you there. Ciao!
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
Pablo, have you had the Filipino burritos up in the Bay Area?
I don't think I have. You got to come up here.
I think we just made a date for the next time we're all going to meet to have Filipino burritos. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and next time on Latino USA, a conversation with jazz musician and director of the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, Arturo O'Farrell. We talk about his latest project, Fandango at the Wall. That's next time on Latino USA.